welcome to Sammy. We are delighted that you're joining us. No stranger to the distillery world, has worked in this area or has been submerged into this area quite recently. Sammy, warm welcome. Let's start with something pretty easy to kick things off. Who are you? And what is it that you do?
Yeah, so I'm Sammy, obviously. Sammy Vicky, the co-founder and CEO of Gen Labs, the company behind Distillery. So, I pretty much oversee everything from the tech side to the physical side, the logistics, fundraising, financing, everything.
Right. So a true entrepreneur getting stuck into multiple different areas of running a business. So basically you're busy, Sammy. Would I be safe to assume that?
Yeah, we are. Yeah, it's pretty crazy at the moment. So we've decided to, because we don't like our social lives, essentially, we've decided our entire lives to not only launch a distillery, but a global distillery and a tech platform and tech business at the same time. So let's see if it's feasible.
Well, that's actually quite leading into my next question. I was really quite keen on unpicking was, you know, you and I have not known each other long, I think it's safe to say, but from what I have been reading about you, you're a bit of a go-getter. So I think you've just alluded to it there, Sammy, but, you know, you started off as a nightclub promoter, you founded several companies alongside your co-founder, some major festivals that you've got stuck into. You've just mentioned a tech company that you founded. Like, where does all of that come from? Where does that attitude, that mentality, that gusto come from?
Most definitely my parents. My parents both came from relatively poor backgrounds. My mother came from a really poor background in Morocco, really didn't have any education either, came to England and the UK relatively young, long story short, through an arranged marriage, which she just was not a fan of. So she actually ended up leaving her husband, but she was in England, couldn't speak the language, had no education, no nothing, but she managed to get on her own feet independently, find jobs, find incomes, learn the language completely alone and isolated in a different country. My father did speak the language, but he was raised in a poor background in India, fled India, came to the UK, joined the UK Merchant Navy when he was really young. And became one of the youngest ever captains in the UK Merchant Navy. Went on to found relatively successful company. All the drive really comes from my upbringing and my parents just solving problems and managing to somehow raise us.
I love that. Managing to somehow fit in raising us and doing a really good job of it as well. Well, let's just use this opportunity to give them a bit of a shout out. So Mama and Papa Sammy, thanks for what you've done and how you've got to this place. So that mentality and attitude, I mean, that I think comes through into the business that you've just set up. I think it's, from what I've been reading, really underpins the values of DGen Distillery. You know, it's a game-changing company. I liked something that you shared on your website, which is, you know, rather than seeking the next big thing, you're all about making the best, the next thing and owning that. Can you tell us a little bit about the thinking and the concept behind DGen Distillery?
Yeah, I mean, really it does come from mine and my co-founders. Sort of touched upon it a little bit there, but I'll just do a very quick summary on it. So I sort of co-founded my first business at 18 and I was studying for a law degree and realized I just hated law. So ended up scaling that business to do about $30 million worth of revenue, but learned a lot of lessons because it ended up collapsing. But after that, I moved into tech and launched we call it a Web2, but we live in the Web3 world, but just a traditional tech company. scaled that pretty quickly, and then had some successful exits and finance. And at that point, I was like, well, in my mid-20s, early 20s, I was like, I had some decent capital, you know. So I just wanted to have a little bit of fun. And I almost fell into hospitality and events. I was just partying a lot, truth be told. And then I was approached by a successful club at the time who said, well, you're always here, do you just want to throw some events? And then I ended up scaling that into the UK's fastest growing events business. And, and as you mentioned, I bought a nightclub, turned it around to be top five music venues in the UK, to go with some festivals, pubs, restaurants, etc. And always, it was very obvious at the time that everything that we really did, and the reason we were able to scale businesses really quickly and turn around businesses, is because we built a community of people who sort of followed us into whatever we were doing and who trusted us. So me and my co-founder, we'd spend a lot of time in tech, in blockchain, in crypto, and sort of futuristic tech, shall I say. And we noticed a lot of problems went through with that tech. And I won't go into the technology side of the business too much, but the whole ethos was, right, we've created communities before, and it's the communities really that are the driving force behind the brands that we've created. So can we co-create the next big international spirits brand by finding that community first and then allowing that community to co-create the entire brand with us? So we essentially build a community. We have a community of around 2,500 people at the moment. We're looking to expand that. We're looking to expand that into about 30,000 by April. We're going through a campaign, and the idea is we allow our community to get involved in the process of setting up a distillery. So you can get involved from co-creation of branding, of labeling, of recipe designs, all the way to distribution, to sales, partnerships, marketing, etc. And we essentially incentivize those community members to, long story short, own part of the value that they create. So who brings something to the table, that they, our tech allows them to tokenize and own that revenue.
And that's when we start to talk about things like, is it Origo NFT? That's the sort of key and an entry point into this community. Is that right?
Yeah, so initially we did 655 Origo NFTs. So they went on the market in November. So community members had to buy the NFT to be able to be in with a to be able to essentially join the club. The NFT also allows additional utilities and benefits. So, for example, if you are an artist or creator, or you own other bits of NFTs and digital art, you can license that to us. We essentially incorporate that into our bottle designs and distribute them around the world, and then pay the NFT holder a licensing fee for that. So the whole premise is, can we find a community that can co-create a brand from design to distribution, right, from seed idea to execution? Essentially really leverage that community to become the fastest growing spirits brand in the world.
Absolutely. And I think when I first heard of this concept, it drew me immediately to the concept and membership idea that underpins BrewDog. I think if you see that a company like that started very much a beer of the people, very craft independent, and has over the last 10 years grown into experiences. You know, you've got a chain of bars and experiential bars, if you will, across the globe, but very much their fans and their advocates and loyal drinkers are members. They have a stake in the business, and they have a stake in that and how things play. And that it was funny having that recollection, because actually BrewDog is an important part of your story as well.
Yes, they are. So we were actually going to, when we were coming up with the concept, we were actually going to build our own distillery or buy a distillery off the market or whatever it was. That's off to people that do it. But the real value in what we do, the value prop, really is the tech, the business model and the idea. So we ended up approaching BrewDog and asking BrewDog whether they would be keen on partnering. And luckily, it went incredibly smoothly. They're amazing people to work with, and they're very open-minded to, as they are such a disruptive brand, they're very open-minded to futuristic tech and futuristic ways of thinking about how companies can form and how those companies aggregate around communities. So yes, long and short of it, we are actually fully partnered with BrewDog. They do all of our liquid production, manufacturing, distilling. They help us with supply chain, logistics, distribution. They help us get into key retail accounts in the UK across the world. They sell us in all 130 of their international bars. They'll sell us on brewdog.com. They help us with, again, international marketing and PR support. So it's an amazing partnership, and we're really lucky to have them as part of the brand.
Well, it sounds like the co-founder and CEO of BrewDog feels the same way. James Watt was in some articles that have been distributed tail end of 2023. He says that Deakin Distillery stood out from the very start as a shiny example of disruptive organization looking to democratize a business model and use groundbreaking new technologies to reach its community. I think that's a really important word, democratize. It's not really done before. And to be honest, I don't think it's done in a major way in this industry. So you are a game-changing brand that's coming into this industry to build something quite different. NFTs, in a certain extent, is something that we've dabbled with, particularly in the luxury market. But for those, let's go back a couple of steps. For those who aren't really sure what we mean by NFT, is there a really dumbed-down version for our audience of understanding what that actually means?
Yeah, of course. So the classic example of an NFT at the moment, for anyone who may have just come across the abbreviation, is some type of monkey picture or artwork.
And that's right.
That just exists on the internet, and an individual can own that. And now that is one part of a very, very multi-layered technology. So the idea of an NFT in the purest and simplest form is the ability to own something digitally, right? So if you think about the physical world and think about the surroundings around you, from what I can see, you've got a microphone, you've got a chair, you've got a headset, etc. Those are all physical, non-fungible items that exist in the real world, and you own them. Now, when you go when you go to the internet, it's an open forum. You don't really own anything other than perhaps a copyright to something. What blockchain allows and what NFTs allow is digital ownership over a good or an item. And the underlying blockchain technology, without getting too technical, supports a type of distributed digital ledger which shows who owns what. And it's a proof of ownership. So essentially the NFT for us and how that works in our model is a proof of the fact that you are a member. You don't have to have a physical account. You don't have to have email addresses, whatever it is. And you own that as an asset. So the NFT the membership becomes an asset. Now within our ecosystem, I'm sure we might get there, but just to fully drill down on why NFT. So all the value that an individual creates within our ecosystem, we attach it to their NFT. So their NFT starts having value. So if you want to leave the ecosystem, if you want to just relax from the ecosystem, you can digitally own that value forever. So it opens up sort of borderless digital formats of ownership for us, over and above a little bit of artwork and something that you could just show to people. So I won't dive too deep into the tech, but to go back to the real world synergy I was trying to pull up there. So an NFT is anything you can own digitally. So imagine the physical world goes to the digital world, the candlestick in front of you, the microphone, the chair, etc. All of those would be NFTs. They're just digital items, essentially.
Absolutely. And ones that it's almost like an investment as well, because that value can increase over time, or just like you would have as a shareholder and a dividend that pays out kind of thing. Is that how it works?
I mean, yes and no. So partly, yes. Yeah. So it's definitely not a share. It's not a security. It's not anything that pays out a dividend. But it is something that you can own and be part of an ecosystem. We have to, I think a lot of people equate crypto and NFTs to stocks and shares on a listed exchange. It's not really like that. Just it's only like that because of the financial element to it. But the one thing that I haven't touched on blockchain is the reason why blockchain and the reason why NFTs is blockchain as a sort of operating system is the first time ever on the internet that you can have digital scarcity. So, for example, there are only, 1,000 Ferraris ever produced of a certain range in the real world. Well, if you go on the internet and you saw a picture, everybody could copy and paste it, save it, whatever, but you wouldn't own it. Now, with blockchain, you could say, okay, there's only going to be 1,000 pieces of this, and you can prove that 1,000 people own that. It's just trying to bring a lot of the physical format into the digital world.
Yeah, 100%. And I think we're moving into that space where more and more people are understanding this world, and the Internet of Things are bringing this about. And you can see some premium brands, particularly in this area, talking about NFTs and releasing maybe limited edition drinks, premium whiskeys. Johnny Walker was one example in a collaboration with CC Friends. And almost that bottle became an invite to an experience or a membership, etc. So this is, we've been dabbling, and Sammy, DGen Distillery are actually actively taking that into a next stage where the ownership is allowing consumers to feel part of your journey at Signet. So, I mean, the first release that the distillery has created has just hit the market. So we're talking about 71 vodka. Tell me how did that even come about? Why vodka?
Yeah. So why vodka? So it is a good question. So when you're setting up in the international community, we have community members based in Canada, China, Chile, Australia, the four corners of the world. So when you're setting up an international community, you really have to think about international tastes. So we wanted to have the ability to have as much of a mainstream product as possible that works across different categories, geographies, demographics, etc. Now, I'm sure, again, this may be a question you're about to ask, like, what's next? The whole idea was just to be able to provide a premium initial product. What comes next, whether that's flavored vodkas, gins, rums, tequilas, whiskeys, what comes next is completely down to the community. But we didn't want to come up with something that was relatively niche, that only attracted, you know, a certain demographic. So I think a vodka is a fairly open format.
Yeah. And I mean, releasing your first release is a big deal. It's a huge risk. It's you're not only, yes, capturing that audience and delivering for that community that has multiple different tastes. You've also got to set the tone of your brand, and as you said, you're reaching a premium position in the market. But before we dabble into like how that went into the design, if you picture your target audience, like who would that be?
The target audience for us, really, we have a few different segments. So for the members themselves, for the Origo holders, the NFTs, we really target creators, innovators, disruptors, futurists, people who have the ability to question why and question how and question why things aren't done in a better way. You know, we know, and people in the alcohol industry know that it's an industry that just hasn't had any real innovation in a very, very long time. It's an industry that really focuses on heritage of a 1,000-year-old recipes and processes, and which, listen, there's a lot of value to that. Definitely on the distilling side, I fully agree, but it is 2024 now, and we need to question how technology comes and disrupts every single industry across the world, and how SMEs and startup distilleries, which we do also help with our technology, how they can access very gatekeep distribution processes, and how they can grow their brand. So that's definitely on the community side. Wow. On the product side, We're a little bit more open, as I said. It is the whole premise of the initial product one, Gen Zero product, is that it is open to a wider audience. But we definitely, on the marketing side, will target tech savvy individuals. Again, a little bit futuristic people. More likely people who spend time on devices, laptops, on the actual internet, in meme culture, in understanding Twitter, social media, etc. So that would probably be our initial target, like the Google type execs, the techies, the tech people.
That's really interesting, because actually there's a lot of conversations going on amongst other things in this industry around the new luxury market isn't what we expect. Is the, you know, millennials that are now making a considerable disposable income, that have, you know, 90s, noughties influences, perhaps not as digital savvy, yet very, very interested in quality over quantity, and have the money to pay for that luxury. But now, especially around COVID, you're starting to see a new generation of people coming through, a younger audience that has the disposable incomes at such younger ages. And that feels like it really aligns with where your brand is heading, because they do understand this area, and they understand tech, and they're very interested in future and what that holds. And perhaps a bit game-changing themselves.
I don't think people quite know how quickly certain amounts of tech are coming, like the Apple, what is it called? The Apple Vision thing, where the headset.
Now, the Vision goggles, yeah.
Goggles, that is, again, that's Gen Zero, that's product one. Imagine, can you remember how awful the first iPod was and the first iPhone was? To be able to have a brand now, perhaps giving away a little bit, a few surprises that we have up our sleeve, but to be able to have a brand which we can have multiple AR activations, which we can have multiple RFID chip activations embedded into the bottle, into the actual design. We're looking 5 years, 10 years ahead in the future in terms of what the, and that allows, being a tech company, at our heart, allows us to really leverage that. So we're looking at things that the big players won't look at for another decade.
100%. And I guess it feels right that Apple is used as a good reference point here. But what's really interesting is I was recently reading a book around, you know, good strategy, bad strategy. And Apple obviously went through a real predicament many years ago when Microsoft was really stepping up its game. It was becoming the Intel processor that all were using, and Apple were really suffering with its multiple different products. And what they were talking about was Steve Jobs actually taking over and reducing, streamlining. And then they asked the question of, well, what's next then? So you've streamlined, you've cut down your products. And he's like, I'm just waiting. I'm waiting for the next big thing, or I'm waiting to create the opportunity to create something pretty special. And that game-changing thinking is something I'm seeing through our conversations here, Sammy. So I'm buzzing. I'm really buzzing for where this is going.
We've been waiting as well. So we're in a lucky position that we've had other businesses and revenue streams and whatever, and not a lot of spirit brands can do this, but we've been building since early 2022. So it's been nearly 2 years. We haven't fully launched yet. So we've been making sure that, so again, I've launched what, 7 businesses. My co-founder's got £100 million plus business. So we've been through this before. We know that timing is everything, and we feel that this year, the timing is completely opportune, which is why we're starting to go pedal to the metal right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And we haven't mentioned Tom, so a bit of a shout out to Tom, and we'll ask a bit more about him later on in terms of your partnership and moving forward, because it sounds like you've got a really good balance as two founders of the distillery. But let's talk brand. It's something we really are particularly passionate about at Signet. Knowing these audiences, knowing who you're trying to capture, knowing what you're at, your what you wanted to achieve, tell us a little bit about the design of the 721 vodka. I mean, anyone who's interested, please do visit DGen Distilleries website, and you will see and you'll be immediately hit by this quite different looking bottle. Tell me about the design process. What was the thinking behind creating this look?
Yeah, so it's a good question. And let's just touch upon the name as well. So, people understand where the concepts have been birthed from. So 721, just as a heads up, now this is a little bit tech geeky, so we don't expect people to ever know this, but there is an NFT standard. It's an open protocol in the blockchain world that allows NFTs to actually exist. And that standard is called ERC-721. So that's a little bit of a nod just to our roots and where we came from and how our community really interact with us. They all interact with us through 721 NFTs. So 721 vodka. 721 vodka just make complete sense. Now, in terms of like where we are and where we started seeing a lot of traction and interest from the community. So we build with community, as I mentioned. Now, there's a lot of people. When you have thousands of people in the community, there are a lot of different opinions and preferences and venues to be able to drink and party or just leisurely do things. You have the nighttime, night owls, etc. Party people, which I used to be, which I'm now more moving to the daytime drinkers and the sitting out in the sun going to festivals. So
it's a good place to be, Sammy. Good place to be.
Yeah, we that in the way our community was slowly forming. So the whole brand design was we actually within one product just create two different types of brands, which again hasn't really been done before. It's the same product. So we've got a day version and a night version. The night version is the black bottle and the day version is we call it Vault with it. It's the color that we've sort of branded ourselves, but it's like a limey type, a yellowy green type color.
That's right.
So we actually segment a lot of our strategies and our community acquisition into like a nighttime focused marketing and daytime focused. So the bottle follows that itself.
Wow, I didn't even think that was happening. So you're right, like that's it's incredible thought process. Was that an idea that came from you and Tom, or was that did you seek some support with the design, or did it come from the community?
It came from the community, but it took us a little while to realize. So we did work with a fantastic branding agency. I'll give them a little shout out, Paris Studios. And they really sort of sucked it out of us. And we did, I tell you now, we did hours and hours and weeks of workshops and figuring out like what the brand is and where the target audience is and what the look and feel should be. And it just sort of came out eventually around like a boardroom type conversation. And we were talking about narratives and things that we picked up from the community. It just became really obvious. And that's also where the initial brand colors come from. But if anyone sees our website, it's black and vault, really, and everything day and night.
I love how you've come up with your own taxonomy, vault. It's the new color of the year. It's brilliant, and it's already starting to some branding there. So, I mean, with the dynamic of it being a membership organization, if you will, and the community members having a stake and a say in how the design, not just the design, of course, the full operations of the distillery. How do you anticipate managing that in terms of creating this coherence and this consistency, but still being able to enable those members to have a sway in design?
Yeah, of course. So, again, working with thousands of people across the world, it will always have its challenges, and we know that. However, I think there's a real disconnect when you look at traditional brands, and especially like name any mainstream, large-scale, traditional brand, alcohol, spirit brand across the world, there is a huge disconnect between boardroom and the people that actually drink this, right? So what we do in our approach is we try and break down those barriers. Now, the community will never have full say and full direction over everything. We're extremely transparent about that. But what we want to do is involve that community in all of our decision-making process. So to be able to be transparent with that community, with that private members group, and to be able to have clear lines of communication, we do weekly calls. We are constantly in a private Discord chatting with them all day, all night. To be able to have that sort of ebb and flow between exec decisions and community allows us to find product market fit much quicker. It allows us to find out what products may work, what products might not work, what the general idea of thousands of people across the world are, across different geographies, because you know you always have inherent biases as a founder, as an executive, or as any type of manager in an organization. You have the biases that you were brought up with, your gender biases, your religious biases, your geography biases. Now, being able to have constant and 24/7 contact with that allows us to break down what we believe will work to what we have some data that thousands of people across the world.
That's really interesting. And in fact, you're quite right. It's not necessarily that you don't get that insight, and our distillers and international brand groups, of course, put a lot of money into that research, but it's not in real time. It's a fixed amount, like it's a fixed piece of work. You get that intelligence, you act on it, but you have direct real-time access to the people that most love your brand, and they are your audience. So gauging that insight in real time and being able to almost uptick those things that are, you know, those patterns that are coming up quite often, and to act on that is a really empowered position to be in, I think, when it comes to your brand.
There's a huge difference, I think, between paying for a focus group and doing some marketing research with a clipboard on the side of the screen. I think there's a huge difference to that type of research versus having those thousands of people in a private server and a private Discord who know your brand, who know you as a founder, who can pull you up on decisions. You're not getting that from a focus group. You're not getting that from external groups who don't know anything about the team, the execs. So we have a very open relationship with our community, and sometimes they tell us that we're doing things wrong, and we fix that. Sometimes they tell us we're doing things amazingly, and we sort of go with it. So the real-time communication really trumps anything that marketing research provides you with.
Yeah, 100%. So in this industry, they talk a lot about how your bottle stands out. Like you've got this one moment now as a new brand to really set the tone, to attract that audience, to attract that interest. We talk a lot about shelf appeal. So if it's sitting on the shelf, or whether it's an online shelf, whether it's in Block Bar, whether it's on a supermarket Waitrose shelf, how is it? What importance do you think that the look and feel actually has on making a difference in that regard? Yeah, or does it? For this type of brand?
I mean, it 100% does. It 100% does, especially when you're talking about retail types of segments and clients and like any major supermarket, etc. There will be, when you're talking about footfall across those aisles, we've all seen them before. They are incredibly cluttered these days. And I really remain completely shocked that most alcohol brands still haven't picked up on the fact that they just need to stand out a little bit better. A lot of these are, and I take nothing away from it, because I guess a lot of these have huge market share, so why change? But a lot of these are just clear, sort of soulless, lifeless bottles that don't really give you as an individual, a feeling that when you're actually holding it and buying it, it gives you the feeling of, yes, what might happen when I drink this, but doesn't give you any brand affinity. I'm not going to name any names at all, but you could go to Waitrose, as you mentioned, and you can walk down the aisle and you can pick up most of those bottles, and it's not really going to give you much of an identity, much of a, I am part of this tribe, I am this person, I identify as this person. So if you look at like Apple products, nobody buys like a laptop because the functionality. Otherwise, if it's the functionality, you go to Windows. It's not the best product. The best product is Windows PC. People buy.
I love how we didn't mention any of the industry brands and distilleries, but when it comes to tech, let's just call it as it is.
I mean, because this is obviously a little bit more of a
niche,
various industry focused podcast. So I'm not going to call out anybody there, but you buy Apple products because of who you think you are, right? You identify as that person. I'm a clean creator, futuristic type of person. You buy Nike. You buy a Nike tracksuit because you identify as that, right? I don't think you walk down a spirit aisle at the moment and you go, "I am a X type person." BrewDog probably are the only ones, I think, on the beer side of things, definitely have nailed that.
Yeah, I agree. And I think with BrewDog, their CEO is quite vocal. He's a really good spokesperson, is a really good almost thought leader in that regard. Going back to DGen, do you think that influence is something important in terms of your growth? You know, are you tapping into influencers or being almost influencers yourselves as founders?
Yeah, so a bit of both. So we definitely have a fairly substantial influencer campaign, which is about to be rolled out. But that's made in the tech world for people to really join the community. As I mentioned, we're looking to really expand that community from the 2,000 people in Discord at the moment, like 30,000. So we have an influencer campaign going live. We definitely will start pushing ourselves to the forefront of the brand a little bit. We don't necessarily want the brand to be us, but we're incredibly experienced to almost show people what we've done before.
Yeah, 100%. And I liked what you said earlier about we're going beyond what just stands out. And I think particularly at Signet, we totally agree with you. It's not just about the looks. You need to go further, because if everyone starts going with the same look, then you all become the same. It's about what's unique about your brand. How do we create those micro experiences that really resonate? But going beyond, and you touched it on there, is how do I identify with this brand? Because that's where we're at, is what this vodka says about me. And I think that's a really interesting dynamic. And I think the aesthetic and look all plays a part. The touch, we talk about like sensory overload of how we're creating that. And I'm really interested to see how you're going to do that with VR, with augmented reality, et cetera. As we look to the future, of course, being part of the program with BrewDog, being the first startup that they are, as part of their accelerator program as well, it's really great. And you've touched on that, how you're almost being launched into a really good position due to their networks and their distribution support. It's given you a good starting point, and you're about to really accelerate with 30,000 in your community. What is the ambition ultimately for Distillery? Of course, this is going to change. You're at the beginning of the journey, but like, what are you setting out to do?
It sounds crazy. We're in the startup phase, but we're setting out to be the fastest growing distillery brand in the world. We can do that because we have designed some of our own technology, which allows us to distribute our products across the world without having a large sales team. So we can incentivize through ownership of revenues, through tokenization of revenues, etc. We don't need to dive too deep into the tech side, but that tech is fully supported by Google as well. So we've partnered on the Google side. So hopefully that allows people to understand that the substantial nature of the tech that we've built. That's also why we were able to partner with BrewDog, because they love the business model and the brand itself, what the brand stands for. But the underlying technology, I think we can disrupt the entire global 708 alcohol market.
So of all the guests we've asked this question to, I don't think that's been one of them. So that ambition is absolutely coming through. And I think there's some exciting stuff coming your way. Going back to, we're building a community here. How can people join your community? How can people get involved?
So the easiest way, so if you are Web3 savvy, the easiest way is to jump on OpenSea. It's a marketplace, buy an NFT, and join the Discord. Now, that might be complete alien to some listeners. So the best way for non Web3 enabled individuals is to head to degendistillery.com. That's DEGEN distillery.com. And there's a whole host of links there on Twitter, Discord, etc. You can follow those links. You can join the Discord server, which essentially that has a public side, a public facing side, and a private facing side. So if you join the Discord server, the public facing side, we have a team of moderators, of community managers, etc., who can really educate you on what you need to do, answer any questions.
I love it. And I think to a certain extent, you've actually already accommodated for those who are really intimidated, perhaps, by this world. They're being supported just as much as the advocates who know this technology through and through. And in a sense, having a little bit of an unintended consequence of educating an older generation potentially into what it means to employ blockchain technology in business models. And particularly, we're intrigued in how that's happening in the premium spirits industry. So I'm going to ask you one more question before we go. And it is, if you were to encompass DeGen Distillery into one word or phrase, what would it be?
Innovation.
Okay, I didn't think you were going to go with innovation, but I think it's important also that we follow up with DeGen is short for degenerate, which is someone who is very ambitious, who is not afraid of risk, who is going to take the plunge and throw themselves into a new. And I feel like your brand, yourself, Sammy, really embody that sentiment really well.
Yeah,
I think it would be fair.
I'm on the degenerate side of things, so it's almost like a lot of language, like a colloquial language, right? In so far as I can't think of any examples off my head. Stick now means great, you know. Bad means good. Like, so degenerate.
Wicked. Actually,
yeah, means amazing. All of these things. That's in our world. There's like the fintechy stock trader, etc., and the crypto sort of world. Degen is actually a term of endearment. It means that you are a forward thinker, you're a rule breaker, you are a risk taker. So that really is the embodiment of the distillery itself. So we call all of our community members the degeneration, because they are the generation that hopefully will not only change the spirit game, but the long-term strategy is to allow any other business around the world, including multiple different spirit startups, to really leverage our technology and change the whole world.
That's fab. And thanks for clarifying that. I wasn't just calling you a degenerate in colloquial terms. Sammy, thank you so much for your time. We've already run over. I know you are a busy man. But thank you also for what you're doing. Thank you for the contribution you're making to this industry, because I think we're only seeing the start, of course, of what's to come and what's really going to change our thinking across the industry, and perhaps challenge our assumptions of what could work moving forward in accessing similar audiences or tapping into similar interests. So I appreciate you taking your time at such a busy stage in your development, and we wish you all the best and all the luck. And if we can help you, we will also be that too.
Amazing. Very much appreciated. Thanks for your time. It's been a lot of fun. Maybe we'll do it again in a few months or 6 months,
yes,
or a year. Do a little bit of a catch up and see how we're going on our journey.
Do you know what? That is an absolute date. Let's check in, because we are very keen to see how you fend. Thank you again, Sammy.
Love it. Much appreciated. Thanks.